Women in the Economy Commission, August 7th, 2018. And I'm representing Becky Edwards here with other commissioners, Commissioner Robinson, Commissioner Wallace, Commissioner Bonas, and co-chair Commissioner Rebecca Chavez-Hall. First of all, do we have a motion? We have minutes before us of our last meeting on June 5th. We have a motion on our minutes. Commissioner Bonas, is that you? Commissioner Wallace?
A motion to approve the minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. Motion before us is for approval.
I don't think we have a quorum. Do we need a quorum?
Oh, we probably do.
We have 11 members, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
We have one more person to vote
for. So let's wait till Judy shows up, then we should be able to
vote. Okay, thank you. We'll wait on that. Thank you. Thanks for that astute counting. All right. We'll go to our first item on the agenda then, which is our education roundtable planning. So as a little reminder and review of what this is we had talked about having a follow-up to the research that has come out from the YWCA, the research that's come out from the Center for Women's Leadership at UVU on women in higher education, and pulling in some of the experts in that field, including regions, folks from USHI, folks from the Utah System of Technical Colleges, and others who may be interested in this issue, and having basically a discussion of really what the data says, how that has an impact on their particular institution, and doing some brainstorming and learning what their plan is in terms of advancing the information and the causes that are portrayed in the data, and also seeing how we could help support those efforts. Representative
Chavez, have
you any comments about
that? Yeah, so I was just thinking about this morning. There was a task force or a working group that the governor convened 5 years ago, I think. And Kathy, were you with DWS at that time? Do you recall, was DWS pulled into that? Do you remember at all?
What was it for?
There were concerns about graduation rates of women in post-secondary education. And so we ran legislation in the past to establish a working group that was under the office of the governor, with the governor's working group on women in education. I can't remember the name of it precisely. But they were convened for 2 years. They actually had an office. They had, I'm trying to remember if it was in the Department of Community and Culture or it might have been under economic development. It might have been under economic development. Mm-hmm. But they had staff. They had a director, and they had another young woman who was like an administrative researcher person. And the thing lasted 2 years, and then we stopped funding it.
I think for 2 years they received $150.
Yeah, and they were starting to do the work, and I was just kind of baffled that I hadn't thought about it sooner, that we'd been down this road in a way before, that there was work that had been done. I don't recall. I wasn't on that committee. Patrice was Representative Arendt was our caucus rep, because it was you know somebody from the minority caucus, kind of like we have with this commission. And so she was on it, and I even remember that, and I think it was done in conjunction with the chamber, because I remember there were some presenters from the chamber. There was a conference at the Little America that was a one-day conference talking about women in education, and they had presenters, and I can't remember what else we did on that. I do remember going to one breakout session for that. I wasn't able to attend the whole day, so that's why it's kind of fogging in my brain. It may have been as long ago as 6 years ago. It's been a while. But there was this really great energy behind it. The governor was behind it, and then the next year we opted not to fund it, so the office was disbanded, and here we are today. So in recalling that, I'm thinking that it would be good if we could figure out what they had come up with, and see if we can use that as maybe not necessarily a springboard, because I want the springboard to be the research that we've done, but I think we need to either revisit that or have somebody say, you know, this is where we left off when we did that, and maybe there's somebody with the Regents that, or Yushi, that has institutional knowledge of what happened with that particular thing, and then take it from there. But there was, it just kind of hit me that, my gosh, we've been, why does this feel like deja vu all over again? Because it is deja vu all over again. We tried this before because we as the legislature opted not to fund it. It just kind of disappeared into the mist. So I think that utilizing it and kind of merging it with what the work that we've done, the whatever findings they had, because I don't know whether, my recollection is they were supposed to have come up with a working plan, some sort of action plan based on the research that we know, based on what, you know, we're finding, this is what the institution should be doing. And maybe that's what happened. Maybe it was the institution should be doing X, and because of that, they were ready to do it. I'm sorry. You know, we might be in the same boat this time. So how do we, you know, it could be a case study on what to avoid this time to make sure that our efforts aren't waylaid or the delays aren't kind of out from underneath us. But I think that would need to be a part of, that would be my recommendation, that we find that information out, and then maybe as part of the discussion or the round table that we say, where have we been? Mm-hmm. What do we know now? And what are we going to do about it? Because I think that those are the three big questions that I have in my head. That I think is where we're going in terms of the objective of this is, you know, we're just going to continue to spin our wheels unless we, as the commission and in concert with these other stakeholders, say, this is not good enough, and we're shortchanging our community and our families and our women by not doing something about it. So those are my thoughts.
Okay, thank you very much. Commissioner Bonas.
So I was just going to ask you if it was agreed in code or by an executive order, but I just found an old news article that said that Gary Herbert created the Utah Women's College Task Force. Might that be it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And appointed the State Board of Regents as vice chair, and it's supposed to help raise the educational aspiration of Utah's female population. Is that
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Okay. So at least I have a starting point.
Okay. What year was that written?
This is 2011.
Oh, gosh. Oh, it's all right. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Could you send out any links that you're just finding to all of us for just point of reference? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I think that they were,
I think they reported to the education standing committee. I think. I don't know who they reported to.
For sure they came to Higher Ed Approach.
Okay.
That's where,
and that's where you funded them.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I was on Higher Ed Approach at the time, and I'm just writing to their staffer right now and saying, can you help me give us some background on funding, when it started, why we didn't fund them? Because he could maybe provide some context there as well.
Because I remember even the following year when we decided not to fund it anymore, Representative Arendt, on the day that we passed that final budget, tried to make an amendment. I mean, we were fighting to try to get that money back in. But
until the very end.
Until the very end.
Hey, Shelley, I just sent you a link. Can you send it up?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Commissioner Wallace. Just a tab on that. Did text Heidi Walker, the Salt Chamber, to see if she remembers. So if I hear back from her, I'll share that with
that sounds good.
Shelley, yeah.
Yeah, I apologize that I just thought about it this morning because I wanted to have that in advance of thinking about it. But I still think that we can think about logistics and who we want at the table and who should be invited, and start moving with setting a date. Because it just occurred to me that if we want to do this at the end of October, that this needs to be the priority for our meeting today of figuring out when, how, and why, and who. All of the W's.
I have a question for Commissioner Robinson.
Yeah.
Being in the higher ed world, what do you think, from your perspective, if you're representing higher ed or you're someone from even the Utah System of Technical Colleges, in a discussion like that, what are the pieces of information or what could we best bring to the table as Women in the Economy Commission that would help this be a robust discussion from a higher ed perspective?
So some of the topics I think that would be really helpful would be the challenges with funding education, the difficulty, the increasing expense of a higher education in the state, rising expense of that. I think it'd be interesting to cover some of the non-traditional students and the challenges that those students have getting through higher education. Mm-hmm. When Kathy spoke at a meeting earlier this year of her own experiences in higher education, that resonates with me and as some of the challenges. So for maybe non-traditional students, it's an issue of child care or the lack of online classes, those kinds of accommodations that make it more reasonable to get through in a timely period. All students are struggling to get through in 4 years. I think we're closer to a 6-year graduation rate right now. And I don't know why that is. I think many of our students are working while going to school, which is quite different than what we saw in decades past. And that's a significant challenge as well. And that's probably related to the cost of higher education for them. So I put those things on, and then I think about the outreach that could be done, hitting our public and private systems. So Westminster would be a great one to have on there. Western Governors would be a great one to have in there. And then all of our public system. Another topic would be the transition from a 2-year school into, and the ease of that transition from a 2-year school into a 4-year university would be great.
Well, for me, articulation between the institutions has always been in my mind, because I experienced that with my daughter, both my daughter and my son, but with my daughter, she had gone to university for some pre-nursing classes, was really struggling with them, and a friend of hers had said, well, go retake microbiology at Salt Lake Community College. The teachers are really great at smaller classes. The large classes at VU was what was really hurting Erica's efforts. And so she went to Salt Lake Community College, took a class, passed it, and then when she went to transfer the credit, the university wouldn't take them. Yeah. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. But Westminster did. Yeah. So we ended up transferring. She ended up finishing her degree at Westminster because the university wouldn't take those credits. Right. And I thought, wait a minute, I thought that the Salt Lake Community College was the idea, was a feeder school, or that the idea is that you're trying to get them through Salt Lake Community College so that they can go to the other state institutions, and then ran into the same problem with getting my son into some Salt Lake Community College general ed classes in order for him to then take them over to UVU. It was a little bit easier with that one because they were the lower level classes, but with Erica, hers were senior level classes. And this is where they get sticky about it, is that, well, we don't know whether those classes are good enough. They match up with what our requirements, our standards. And that just, to me, that doesn't cut it. I just don't think it does. If it's a state institution and the community college is a state institution, they should figure out a way to do that to make sure that those classes are transferable. Yeah. And I've already talked to Commissioner Buehler, trust me, about this ad nauseum. But I think if I'm running into it, then inevitably there are tons of students that are running into it. And how many people are, you have for so many students, you have the one chance to get that class paid for and done. And then if you're not able to transfer, then that might be the straw that breaks the camel's back of, fine, then I'm just not going to finish. So I think we need to have a real honest discussion about articulation and transferable credit and things that Kathy talked about in her experiences with the graduate level and the higher level coursework of, no, this is just the way the courses are and you have to do it this way or else you don't get it done. Yeah. And really with our non-traditional students, that is just, and with so many students, in fact, what would be helpful, I think, for everybody to appreciate and understand, and I know our colleagues we need to do a good job of educating them in this regard is, in my mind, I think non-traditional students are the norm, and I don't know that, that the data bears that out or not, but to me, I think nowadays, non-traditional students are the norm, and the students who could, you know, go to school full-time and get things done in 4 years are the anomaly. And I think we need to have a very ardent discussion about what does that mean for our institution. You know, a few years ago, another discussion that we were having up here with our colleagues was this notion of, and John Dougal was someone that was really adamant about this whole issue of, you need to finish in 4 years or we're going to make it harder for you to finish up and it's going to cost you more.
Tuition would raise.
Yeah, they were actually trying to incentivize people to finish in less than 4 years and to incentivize, because I don't know if that's still the case, that if you take 15 credit hours or more, that it costs you less. Because that was one of the things they were doing to incentivize. That's what I thought, is that we passed legislation or we did something that said that you have to, if you take credit coursework in a semester of 15 hours or more, that it will cost you less. Then the fewer hours that you take, it will cost you more. And I think that we did a lot of our population, our post-secondary student population, a major disservice with that. I saw it again as a parent through the prism of my own eyes, because my children, my son in particular, struggles with learning disabilities, and I knew that he wasn't going to finish in 4 years, that he was going to work really hard, and he was very persistent, he'd get done, and it did, it took him 6 years, but he stuck to it, but he wasn't going to be able to take 15-hour credit a semester. Even if he was full-time, he took his 12 hours and pushed through that. So I just, it was very frustrating to me that we were punishing students who need to take less hours versus and incentivizing it in a way of making it about money. And the discussion was about tuition and resources going to the institution of these students that take so long to finish their degrees. And that was a lot of the discussion. And so I want to have, if we're going to have a discussion about non-traditional students, that is kind of an elephant in the room that I think we need to address. Because I think I don't know, this is just anecdotal. I don't know whether we have any research about if with that push towards the increased hours and lower costs, if we're seeing fewer students, if I don't know whether we've done any exit interviews with students about why are you leaving, and maybe that's one of the outcomes of it. We need to have a system-wide mechanism for students to do exit interviews. I mean, counselors, enrollment specialists are so focused on getting them in the door. Are we doing as much of are we as rigorous about figuring out why they leave with as much, you know? And I know that they do it in with the intentionality of we're trying to retain students or we're trying to finish them up, but how many students have slipped through the cracks, you know, just walked away and not return and not sign up for the next semester, and we have absolutely no idea what it is. Because yes, it's individual, but I think we're going to see things and then it's systemic, and then what do we do to remediate that? So that in my head is kind of the thing that I want to work on, is why are we losing the students, and is the system, are the things that we are doing in policy affecting it in a negative way when we thought it was supposed to work in the opposite, in the reverse.
One thing, in addition to this, that I'm thinking of is I'm remembering a panel that Representative Chavez Pauk and I were on last Monday with a group of people were representatives from universities around the country, and maybe 20 folks from different universities around the country, and they were there. We had been invited through the Fannin Center to serve on a panel and to basically talk along with Senator DeBacchus about how best these institutions of higher education could engage with their individual legislatures around the country. And so we gave a little presentation and then a Q&A, and it was really great discussion. At one point, Senator DeBacchus turned a question on to the audience and said, what's happening in your communities? How are you
addressing what we would call non-traditional students? How are you addressing people of color, LGBT students in your space? What are you doing that's working? And there was a woman there from, she was from Texas,
mm-hmm.
right? So the woman on the far right, who talked about the importance of being intentional of in terms of approaching students, potential students, and creating services. She said, we don't talk about mentors anymore. And she had a different word for being a mentor, and I wish I could remember it, because it was much more full embrace and intentional, again, for ways to make sure that students in the community got enrolled, that they finished, and that they also made the next step of getting into a career. And since that time, I remembered about 15 years ago, a time when I was I was doing some volunteering at Head Start in Salt Lake, and the then president of the U of U came down to the Head Start. Maybe it was their graduation. So it was a class of a whole bunch of four-year-olds. And it was primarily a class of Hispanic students at this particular Head Start where I'd been working. And he said at that time, I want you to know that there will be a place at the University of Utah for you. When you're ready to go to college, we are saving a place for you at the U of U. And I didn't realize that, I mean, I thought this is super inspiring. And there were parents there, and I'm sure for some that was like a visual that maybe hadn't been in their minds before. So it was really empowering, and also for me, I thought, well, let's throw some money at them too, because that's going to be a challenge in some situations. But I wonder if those students who are now probably, you know, if they have honestly could be either seniors in high school, or at this point they could be freshman college age, did they end up at the U? What happened to those students? And from that little four-year-old hopeful, they're the place for you at the U of U, what's happened and transcended in their life since that time? And are we working towards serving the needs of our community, especially in Salt Lake City, where we know 22-24% of our student population in our elementary schools are minorities? Are we meeting those needs? And so intentional support around our students, not just in getting them there, but working them through the whole system. I thought that was really a helpful perspective from this representative from a college in Texas who had made some really big efforts in this arena.
So one of the things that I'm trying to wrap my head around is I know that the institutions are each individually doing things. The funding that we came up with, where I can't remember what it's called, mission-driven funding or something like that, where they're able to, we gave them a pocket of money and we said, this is your pocket of money, you get to decide what you want to do with it. And I know some of the institutions, UVU in particular, my recollection is that part of what they wanted to spend their mission-driven funding was to tackle marginalized communities and how to get these students through completion and through the program. So, you know, again, trying to envision part of the discussion. So, you know, so how do we envision doing this? I'd like to see at least a full day. I mean, I think we need to dedicate a full day to this. Because I see the morning being more of where have we been, how have we tried. Well, maybe we started differently. Maybe we start out with presenting our research, saying this is what we've done over the last 4 years, and most recently we did this work on our, you know, what's happening with education, and this is what our findings are. Then we do, where have we been with this topic? Because this isn't the first time we've dealt with this, and this isn't the first time we realized we have a problem. But, you know, Houston, we still have a problem. And then what we do...
That could be our theme.
Houston, we still have a problem. Salt Lake, we still have a problem. Utah, we still have a problem.
And then the next thing would be, okay, institutions and stakeholders, what have you all been doing in the meantime, you know, since over the last few years, whether it's with mission-driven funding, whether it was the results of what you brought from the college task force, what have you been doing? Because obviously you recognize this is a challenge too, or if you don't, hey, here's information we've just researched and we're telling you it's a problem. So what have you been doing? Because I don't want it just to be, you all need to do this, when we don't know if there are trying to, if there are some pressure points that they're trying to address, and if there are things that are trying to do. And then I guess the next question is it enough? Are you moving in the right, are we moving systemically as a state in the right direction, given what we know with our research, what you've been doing, what we've tried to do? So where are the tweaks? What do we now need to do to either tweak the direction, what policy needs to be in place based on what we know, what we've tried to do, and really planning for future student populations? Mm-hmm. And then tying it to the needs of not only industry, but our community. You know, what does that mean to, I even remember a couple of years ago when we did that policy discussion up in University of Utah Eccles Business Center when Jonathan Ball was talking about money. Yeah. Were you there, Jenny? And I kind of surprised me because here's our fiscal analyst, and one of the first things he said is, so, you know, we're doing research on what helps with, you know, improvements in the economy and the economy as a whole. And he says, what we're finding is, if a mother is educated, that's what makes a determination in terms of the optimal outcome for the family. So to have our fiscal analyst for the legislature who's talking about Utah economy as a whole to zero in on that one factor really blew my mind. And yeah. So I think that we need to maybe revisit that again, you know, bring that up. And maybe we even start the discussion with because hopefully we'll get some of our colleagues there, as even the state legislature back in, I guess it was 2014 or 2012 when we did that first one, recognized, you know, our fiscal analyst recognized and very clearly articulated that these are one, that's one of the strongest indicators of maternal educational attainment. Then we go into, and guess what, that's still the issue. Here is what our research has found as the commission. So I think that should map out for a good day, and then try to come up with some policy, right? Because, you know, our goal is to try to provide the legislature and other stakeholders, do we need to be working on it administratively within the institution? How does the public-private partnership dovetail into this? How can the private sector help and dovetail into it? Mm-hmm. And then let's see what we can come up with some solutions. The main reason we're convening you all together is our research is still showing that we still have a problem, that we're still not doing it for some of the population. And it's getting more difficult because of the issue of money for students, the issue of student loans. You know, we could even have somebody do a presentation or a discussion about that.
Yeah. How to get rid of mine? Can we?
Yeah. You know what I mean? People shouldn't have decades, shouldn't be decades ahead of where they graduated and dealing with that kind of stuff.
No, so if we're talking about, I mean, this is very much a brainstorm session here. So just chime in, and people in the audience, if you
have, I was just gonna say, yeah, I was gonna comment. Say, I would love to have,
yeah,
I can see them
right
either.
Please come up, and this is a work in progress, very much
working session.
It's a working session. Otherwise, it would just be two of us in the bathroom saying, I don't know, what should we do? That's why we're all here together. All right, Commissioner Wallace.
Although I, as a Poly Chamber employee, there's so many programs that we do that I'm not familiar with the intricacies of all of them, but I do know about the Prosperity 2020. Mm-hmm. And you may know about it more than I do, but I'm guessing that one of the priorities wasn't necessarily women-focused, but they might have information to contribute or should be part of the conversation.
That's a good point. See, this is the issue. We've had all of these different initiatives and efforts, but I think this is an opportunity for us to kind of pull the threads together, mm-hmm. and say, this is the population that we're primarily concerned with, and we're seeing that we're not making the mark, despite great efforts. It's great. And then there was another thing. Oh my gosh. So as part of Prosperity 20, the governor had another education. I mean, they keep coming up with new things. There was he enrolled it 2 years ago at Salt Lake Community College. And they even had some really great infographic about
it's a new version of Prosperity 2020, because 2020 was getting really close and reaching. Remember, the goal of 2020 was 66%, right? And it became obvious that that was a really big goal. And so it's pathway something. Kathy's on the Google, like,
I'm trying to.
And
it was like
a beautiful infographic, yeah. And it had this pathway, and you know, it's third grade and this and this, yeah. And this. And it was, anyway, for
Kathy
all the time.
Piper might know what that one was on about.
I'm talking about the aerospace pathway.
No.
There's the IT pathway.
I think what it is those are subsets of the bigger thing, maybe. For all the conversations and all the efforts on this issue, I don't think that there has been a time where all of these people have come together.
Yeah.
And we could have, if our morning is information and data sharing, then in the afternoon, having representatives, I mean, this could really be come prepared to share.
Yeah.
And each institution having a moment with the mic and saying, this is where what our situation is, this is how we're addressing it, this is best practices, this is what's working at UVU or Westminster or wherever. And then, go from there into some brainstorming about policy, about funding, etc. Just an idea. Okay. Erin, introduce yourself and make your comments.
Erin Jonathan, Director of Public Policy at YBC Utah. Just a couple, I have about 72 thoughts, but I'll keep it at a couple. One is that Regent Nina Barnes was just elected as Vice Chair of the Board of Regents, and I know that she is incredibly passionate about this and utilizing the current momentum of so many women just becoming presidents of our public institutions, and private, actually. So I think she might be a great first contact. In terms of getting institutions there, I think it would be so powerful to have at least the right people from each institution in the room at that day, I think would make a huge difference. And I just think she would be an amazing contact, and I think she would be all over this. Donna Law, who is the government relations person from SUU, she and I work a lot together, and I think she would be really interested in just, again, making sure we're looking outside of just the Wasatch Front and making sure everyone's included. Susan Madsen, I mean, obviously it was within her organization that the research was conducted. I think she might have ideas and would be a good contact, since that her Women in Education initiative is part of her larger organization. So I think, I think she would be a good contact. And then I just wanted to mention that we are having our Utah Women's Policy Conference in a couple of weeks. And one of the issues, we're zeroing in on three issues, and one of them is access to childcare, and we constantly will be coming back to the fact that it's not just child care in order for women to be engaged in work, but also to be able to finish their education. And I just keep coming back to the story we heard at this meeting when the research was presented, that that's just such a huge barrier. So I just wanted to put that out there, that I think we may come out of that conference with more contact, more people who are interested in the topic, and it will be specific to the child care piece, but I do think that's a huge barrier. And so, there may be some connections there. So those are a few of my
super. What are your other focuses?
The three issues will be access to child care, juvenile justice and education equity, and how that specifically impacts girls of color, because we don't normally put a gender lens on that issue. And then maternal mental health, to kind of keep working from the resolution that was passed. And I think all three of those issues will have really rich discussion, because our whole goal of this conference is how do we create conversation among people who might have different perspectives. And so I would think maternal mental health, nobody thinks that's okay, that we should just have depressed moms running around. But I think
where people disagree is who needs to address this issue. With childcare, we actually have a whole lot of competing values there around what women's roles should be and what the role of the family should be. And I think we could have some really good discussion and get to some common places that it's not. We don't have to disagree on this, even if you do feel that family is the number one priority. Okay, well, let's look at the reality for a lot of Utah families. And then with juvenile justice, again, I think a lot of people want to put a colorblind lens on that issue, so we'll really be looking at some of the racial disparities we see, and then how do we look at girls of color in particular, but that's kind of an unrelated topic. So those would be our three issues, and the whole goal of the conference is really to use this model that we're bringing this expert in from Colorado on to show a different way of having conversation with people who have different abilities, or different abilities, different perspectives on issues. So I think it'll be good.
And he's coming on Friday, right?
He's going on Wednesday to do a pre-conference session. So he's coming Wednesday to a full day with people who want to learn how to facilitate these kinds of better conversations about these policy issues. And then those people will be working with us throughout the conference to then practice facilitating the conversation. And just a quick side note, the co-chairs of the commission are receiving our Public Officials of the Year award at a luncheon Thursday, August 23rd. So just so, if you're interested in honoring them, please join us. Can I send you an email and maybe get out to everyone? Because I think folks who aren't here today too would be interested.
And actually, Erin, what I was going to suggest is, we can send that too, but can you make a point of sending it to Judy Barnett? Because then she can work with Mallory to post. It should be on our website, the policy.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So we can help you get the word out.
Anyway, I didn't mean
to
go off on that.
No.
But I do think the higher education piece will be part of the child care discussion, and I think there will be folks there who are really interested in that connection.
Would you be able to tell us what your audience will be in terms of representatives from higher ed or some of these folks that we're trying to, do you anticipate that you'll have very many of those people there?
No. Hopefully I'm pleasantly surprised, but yeah, that really hasn't been our target audience. But I think Regent Barnes would be
that's super helpful.
And she's just so passionate about it. And she has the courage to know that.
I'm Emily Walsh with the League of Women Voters. And just some thoughts I had while listening, child care, like Erin said, that one's been kind of obvious. But it seems that affordable housing would also impact the ability to go to school, pay for school, as well as transportation. I know the University of Utah seems to be set up very well transportation-wise. But I don't know how well our ATCs, if that was our, DATC, but they, our technical colleges are, or how well our community colleges are 2 years. Weber State, I think, is bus service because it's nowhere near, a front runner. You'd have to take a bus from the front runner up to Weber State, or the bus that goes from Salt Lake to Ogden, so, which aren't enormously convenient. So I'm wondering how transportation, and as mentioned, mental health, just thinking about the people I know who ended up dropping out of school, some of that was mental health. And are we supporting, maternal mental health and just mental health in general? I'm also wondering if high school should be somehow pulled into this conversation. Like our Board of Ed, getting them people in that frame of mind that you graduate from college, not just go to college. Mm-hmm. So those are just some thoughts I had.
Words matter, simple things. Graduate instead of go to college. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes a difference.
So one thing that I was just thinking about, as you mentioned, Erin, that there are people that you're thinking of that would probably really love to be a part of this work, is how we approach an invitation list. because I hate to miss anybody who's interested that we don't know might be interested. But I don't know if I necessarily want this to be a huge public, you know, just posted and anybody who wants to come. But maybe that's what we want. I mean, maybe we do want that. Or do we have more of a public facet and then more of a by invitation, stakeholder, deep dive discussion, and make it a Tuesday thing, or the day is the work and then the evening is the public could come and talk about some of the things they're running. I don't know. I'm trying to envision where I don't want anybody to get missed who would be interested in being a part of this discussion just because we don't know who they are and that they'd be interested in this. But I also want it to make it manageable, because if we're going to do this as a one-day event, I do want to leave with some concrete policy recommendations or institutional recommendations and people that are at the table saying, okay, this is our piece of the pie and this is what we commit to do. So kind of like a pledge of action that, you know, we'll reconvene in a year or in 2 years or whatever to decide that we were able to move the needle on X by we as an institution doing Y. So thoughts on how we approach this invitation thing. Karen?
What if you did, I was like getting all excited.
No, that's fine.
What if you did kind of a presentation of the research in the morning that was open to the public and did a panel with women who are impacted? And so the institution, decision makers, policy makers come to the whole day so that they make sure to hear that, they get the information on the research. And then there's kind of now we're done with the public piece, we're going to be going into kind of a working session for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. But there's a chance for the public to come, hear about the research, and even maybe provide some perspectives through the panel, or maybe the Q&A, other people can weigh in and say, this is how this has impacted me and my family. And so people all hear that, go, and then they go into the working session.
I like having an opportunity for members of the public who are in this world, are impacted, to share their stories. I mean, I think how powerful Kathy's story was, how powerful that young mom with the baby a couple of meetings ago was.
We define them theirs for sure.
You know, and I just think there are thousands of people across the state who have their individual stories that somehow tell a piece of what this is, and for them to have an opportunity to do that, whether it is on a panel or just, you know, person after person sharing stories and having the, you know, if our decision makers, the regions, whoever our core group is that's going to be part of the working group in the afternoon, for them to hear these stories and be able to even engage in a conversation, ask questions of the people who are members of the public who are presenting, I think will be so powerful and put a face back to back on the data. Here's the data, here's real life. Mm-hmm. And that's a game changer, and it's different than any of the settings. Like, I actually don't know if the Board of Regents in their meetings has public comment. Does anyone here know? I mean, I have to assume they do, but I don't know that it's this type of public comment. We clearly have public comment in legislative meetings, but again, it's not always these kinds of personal stories that we hear. So that would be unique and helpful.
You know what I think would be really fun to do as part of this? I'm a visual learner, so this is the kind of stuff I love. But if we have somebody, we can have Gata or somebody help us with this, documenting key phrases that the public is doing, and we do a word cloud. So as we enter the discussion in the afternoon, we have a visual representation of these are the things that are the most prevalent in the comments that we heard from the public this morning, whether it's childcare, whether it's mm-hmm. can't afford it, whether it's I left because of my job, whether, you know, all of those things. So we have a feel for everything is important, but there are certain things that are trending or things that are more prevalent in the concerns of people that are trying to finish and make their way through and what they're running into. So maybe something like that might be kind of interesting to do.
So everyone's going to officially welcome Commissioner Leonardi. Thanks for being here. And you've walked into a brainstorming session. it's great. So this is a jump in if you have a comment on the education
roundtable that we're hoping to have in the fall.
Awesome.
So we're just, like I said, we're just doing blue sky thinking of figuring out operational, you know, the logistics of it. The thing would be who should be invited, what should be the topics. One thing that we've started discussing is that there's been efforts in the past to try to tackle this issue before, and we're wondering what happened to them, in essence, because there was, I brought up the fact that their governor had convened a college task force really specifically focusing on women's completion back in 2011. We as the legislature funded it for 2 years. They had an office, they had a director, they had an assistant who was working with her on research, and then we as the legislature decided not to fund it after 2 years. So that just completely disappeared, but we don't know, I mean, we can't recall what were the outcomes of that. So what we were thinking of is starting off the morning with doing a presentation of our research, then in the afternoon, in the more closed group of, you know, of the working group, of saying, okay, we all know that we've tried this before. What happened to what we were doing? What have you been doing as institutions and as stakeholders in the meantime? With the outcome being of, okay, we know we still have a problem. What is it now that we need to do, given the fact that we've tried these other efforts before, they have not been completed, or you've done the best you can given what we've been able to give you in terms of funding or policy, but where are the levers that we still need to be pushing on? That we as the commission can help move forward in conjunction with all of you as stakeholders. So, but the other piece, especially for you and Commissioner Wallace to help us consider, is how do we integrate the private sector into this discussion so it isn't just this heady governmental discussion with higher ed and with legislators and others. So not needing to have that answer for us immediately, but help us kind of walk through what that might possibly look like. So let's think about some dates. I know that we had talked about, if I recall correctly, Kathy, possibly the latter part of October, but we were trying to avoid, since the department is our staffing entity and we've got interim the week of the 15th, how to get you through that, but then also realizing that November will be a busy interim. So we were trying to find this gap of time, or did we decide to do it in the latter part of November? I was trying to remember if we checked the latter part of November or the first part of December.
October.
Okay, I thought so
too.
Okay.
It was October, but I don't think we kept the date.
And if we were to look at that week of like the 29th, would that be something that operationally you and your staff could help us with and not be feeling like, oh my gosh, we're trying to get stuff done for November interim and other things?
Yeah, no, probably. Let me just double check with my communications team.
Okay.
Because I think they're going to have to be pulled in.
Yeah, definitely. And I would want to, you know, again, make sure that the department isn't doing like some major workforce
That's
conference or that you've got a big other labor-intensive thingy. Or effort going on towards that latter part of the month, and if we can help make facilitate that. How does that work for the rest of you that are commissioners? Because we want to make sure that, of course, everybody that is here would be involved with that. We want to have you.
So the post date of the 29th?
So I'm thinking like the week of the 29th, 31st. Yes, we have elections the following week, so that might be a little heady for some of the legislators, but I don't know, Becky, what do you think?
I'm booked to be in Virginia with a grandbaby that week.
Oh, okay.
So not that week.
Yeah.
So the week of the 22nd then, maybe? That might be too soon, though, right after interim. Could you do that? If we keep things going a week?
My schedule's okay.
Okay.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah. So have them check the week of the 22nd. Okay. Is that good for you?
She's in
Virginia with another baby.
She's in Joanne Fabric. a grandchild, they're not finding out the sex, who's being born during football season. My son is a football coach. And the other child in that family is the one who has leukemia. So he's got he's doing well, but he has a inpatient chemo that week, so I'm now just looking. It does seem like I'm there for. I am going out on the 23rd and staying until the 31st.
Oh, okay.
But the 22nd would work.
Oh, Monday. Okay, Monday.
22nd.
Okay.
That sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it? Actually, I'm looking for Halloween. Lots of family good stuff. So maybe October 22nd. Okay, I'll see if there's good that works. That's open. Do you want to do that? No, not yet. We haven't even thought about it. Do you want to do it at the... I would love to host it there. Okay. You have to charge a rental, but we can give a discount on the space.
Okay.
And let me see if the place is available.
Okay.
But a couple things would be really nice. We could do the sessions, the main sessions down in the town hall.
Okay.
Accommodate about 100 people in there, and we can set the room different ways. Then you could break and go up to the ballroom for lunch,
okay.
which would be lovely. You could do a keynote speaker up there. Mm-hmm. You could go back down to the town hall for the afternoon. There's space. You could do breakout sessions if you wanted mm-hmm. to do that kind of thing. Parking's free. So
it's just fabulous.
It's a great space, and we love to host it.
So on the parking, how many cars can you accommodate? Because I've had some trouble parking there sometimes going to a bath.
Yeah. We can even bring in a valet if we need to. And Zion Bank has been kind enough to let us use the lot behind the bank, which is on D Street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I can accommodate over 100 cars.
Oh, okay. All right. I just want to have people have some option for overflow if we... Okay.
Yeah. And then for large events like this, we push our staff so they have to park a block.
Okay.
To provide some...
Additional space.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sure they love that. They're little blocks.
You know what? They have the best parking of any university employee.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't have to pay for a parking pass, and it's right next to
them. Oh, yeah.
They got a good deal.
So, check on that date. See if they're available. Let us know what the rental is, and we'll figure that out. Sorry, just making sure that I don't have something that I don't know about.
So we have, and how many of you have had an opportunity to interact with our intern, Shahab, our intern. Okay, Shelly, of course.
And Jennifer and Jay, she was connected with the subcommittee
chairs. She's joined our group. She was here in June. And then it's been gone during the summer, but she'll be back in the next couple of weeks, and she'll be doing a lot of the work for this, but you'll have an opportunity to meet her. She's awesome. And
she was at the last meeting. She came to the last meeting. Yeah, and we were able to introduce her.
Great. But if each of you could take upon yourselves the following assignments, brainstorming potential people who we need to include. Okay, so... Erin, check that off your list. You already did that. Robin, Nina, and Donna Law, both good suggestions. So both people to make sure we get the right people at each institution to come, people that can understand this issue and also be in a position of influence and power when they go home and making some institutional changes, people in the business community or in the private world, also maybe some people from the public who could participate and help join us, and then even just as Rebecca's saying, Jonathan Ball, I'm thinking, okay, maybe he could give like a brief presentation. I never get tired of hearing Pam Perlick give us a little reminder of, you know, what our state looks like now and where we're headed with demographics. I think that's helpful. The people who did the presentation here on the research. And if we could send that out to all of our attendees early, so in theory, they could read both the executive summary and if they want to really dig deep into it, so they could be prepared to understand this a little bit. That'd be helpful. So you're really thinking of guest list.
Yeah. And then who needs to be at the table, who needs to be a part of the working group discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do a broader invitation in the morning to, you know, we're revisiting our research, but now want to do something with it, and we would love to hear from people that have had, that would like to weigh in, public members of the public would like to weigh in on this mm-hmm. issue in the morning.
Yeah, so that's sort of your homework, and then in addition to the plate.
I have a recommendation.
Yeah.
Not any, but it would be great if there was some sort of rural representation.
Thank you.
Or viewpoint.
Thank you.
When, so, Commissioner Robinson, when you were involved in the qualitative research, those discussions, focus group,
yeah.
Do you have some contacts from there around the state and these rural communities maybe could
yeah.
reach out to?
We sure do. And then the Enrollment Management Office at the U, which handles not just admissions but our retention of our students, they are concerned about getting students from rural Utah to enroll at the U. They have a couple of counties that they're just not doing well with. We're trying to figure out why that is. So they would be a great contact for us as well. And then Natalie has been working on this idea, this Marshall Plan idea,
mm-hmm.
and how we boost the economy in rural Utah. And she has an incredible contact too. So I'll get you
some yeah.
mm-hmm. for sure. I apologize. I have to leave to be able to get to a meeting
okay.
by 11:30. We have a quorum. Could we vote on the minutes before I walk out?
Yeah, good idea. Thank you. So we're going to go back to the motion that Commissioner Wallace made on the minutes of June 5th. Motion is to approve the minutes.
I just have a really quick
yeah.
correction that I wanted to make. So on the public comment piece on the second page where Emily had talked about the Inland Authority Board and lack of female representation on it, and I had mentioned that I was going to chat with you, which I never got a chance to do. But more of what I was looking at is not the fact that the Economic Development Workforce Services Committee oversees the port, but what I came up with was Representative Chavez Talk, and you got this from my email. Shelley, if you can just pop that in there for the correction. So Representative Chavez Talk will touch base with Representative Edwards to see if in the context of the work of the Economic Development and Workforce Services Interim Committee, the issue of women's representation on the Port Authority Board could be addressed. And I don't know whether we can or not, but I just wanted it as part of the record. So that is more what I was looking at in terms of that. That's more like just to clarify what I was hoping that you and I could work on.
Yeah.
And I don't know, so I thought that it came through you, but it went through Business and Labor. So I don't even know if there's anything we can do about that. But I think one of the other things that we were talking about at the time was, you know, even Senator Escamilla is running legislation on the impact of the Port Authority Board construction on communities, like air quality and some of the other things. So I think that we just want to keep an eye on what's happening with that and how my concern is I would want to make sure that there are businesses that are being recruited or that will be a part of the Port Authority. And is there an overlay or some sort of incentive to see what, you know, things like do they offer child care? Do they cultivate women managers? I mean, that is what I'm looking at. If we're talking about the Inland Port, and Emily was part of this too, if we're talking about the Inland Port as a economic driver, is there intentionality around women being a part of the success of this thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's what our issue is. Because if this is an economic driver, so that's what I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
I mean, can we bring that as part of the discussion in economic development? So, yeah, you and I can talk about that offline. But that is, so you can just take what I sent you, Shelley, and pop that in there. But that would be my recommendation, is I just need to change that a little bit in terms of what I would like to clarify in a minute.
Okay. So that's,
As amended,
yeah. So the motion, and Commissioner Robinson.
Do you need a second?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. So motion before us is to pass the minutes, to approve the minutes as amended. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. thank you for your minutes.
And before she leaves, do you have any word from the research committee? Have you had a chance to meet before? Okay.
We haven't.
Can we give you an assignment?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to hurry and grab you before you run out the door and you can say no. So I think that even though we've had a really good brainstorm here, we need more of a working committee to work on this event. And we'll help you as chairs, and of course the staff will help with that. But can we assign the research committee to work on this to help us implement it and
sure.
maybe make it an assignment for you?
Yeah,
okay.
I'd be glad to do that. And then I'm so glad we have the
internship. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That can help much. We can get a rate all together and work on that. Okay. Okay. Happy to have some
just a question before you leave. You mentioned a rental fee.
Yes.
Do you know kind of figures we're talking about?
I don't know offhand. I can't remember. Because okay. each room gets a different rate.
So it's like,
yeah, because we have like no budget.
Yeah. Could we get a sponsor for this kind of thing?
Well, that would definitely get some yeah. sponsors and donations. That's where I was going to go. Like, okay. We got 25 grand. I don't think we spent anything this year, Joey, have we? So the fiscal year started, so we should still have a 25 grand for our full year.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
But, I mean, we're talking about lunch. We probably want some coffee and juice in the morning or something. Yeah. And if the public's invited too, that just expands, you know. So I want to start thinking about that too. Kind of like, how are we, and who's
so
fundraising?
We're doing another event that's similar in size and the length. So at the breakfast, which is just a fake style, the plated lunch. We're renting the same rooms that we would do for maybe this. And I can get you the budget.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
And then we could start working
on okay.
And I'll just say I can't legally fundraise as a state employee who's
gotcha.
Paid by federal dollars.
Right.
The federal law.
Right.
So,
okay.
But we can.
Oh, my
other
time
I could.
Yeah,
but not
we could. And we can figure out a way.
But I think it'd be good to start filling out those assignments now.
Okay.
Before we.
I'll send that out.
Okay.
For
thank you.
Okay.
I'm happy
you.
To help with anything.
Okay. How much money you got?
They're rolling.
Oh,
oh yeah.
They are. Okay.
Thank you.
Commissioner Leonard, are your lights on?
Oh.
No?
No?
Did I get that?
No.
Oh, no. Maybe just left over.
I misspoke. We have $7,000.
Okay.
We got $25,000 for the study. I apologize.
Okay.
So, even worse than what we
yeah.
actually have. I am so sorry for
that.
Okay.
$7,000
ongoing.
Good to know. Well, all right. Any other comments on that? Then we're going to move ahead to subcommittee updates. We just heard from the research subcommittee. I think any follow through comments from communication?
That would be Judy.
She's not here. And our policy subcommittee. I feel like this is next steps for our policy subcommittee.
Yeah, and where we're at there is we wanted to the follow up that we wanted to do left over from the last meeting is. You and I were going to touch base with legislators that ran bills last year and find out if they're planning to move forward with their legislation again, is there a way that we can help? Do they want to come re-present or how do they want to work with us?
Mm-hmm.
And to reconvene our committee, including that working group that we had going with the Utah Women's Coalition and YWC and others. I've reached out to a few people. The summer's just wacky to try to get people together. So what I'm planning to do is convene us together in a meeting in September after Labor Day. So let's get through Labor Day. Let's get people through their vacation season, and then we'll reconvene the Public Policy Committee and have a better report before for our October meeting. And that's what okay. We'll do with Public Policy. Great. All right. When I think that. It for subcommittee reports then planning our next meeting
couple announcements if that's okay.
Right,
thank you. So the Women's Business Center in Utah is located within the Salt Lake Chamber.
is expanding, and I thought I'd let you know that we've gone online and statewide, which I kind of shared with you in different presentations, but the Salt Lake Chamber is a recipient of new federal money to open a second office in Utah in Cedar City to serve as women business owners in the southern half of the state. So the office here in Salt Lake City will now serve just the northern half of the state, and we're one of just seven that were awarded that across the nation, very competitive. Grant process that we went through, which we're really excited about. We're hiring staff, Salt Lake Chamber staff, that will be officed in Cedar City. And we are working really diligently with other resource providers in those areas. The first support was already being done, collaborate on new things, and then bridge gaps that we see in that order. We will be meeting at YWCA tomorrow, YWCA, along with Susan Matson on a women in entrepreneurship lunch discussion, and that does include rural women from the north, the south, and the east part of the state. So we can share the outcome of that lunch discussion, just as a recap for you, and then if you want further information about women's entrepreneurship through our statewide outreach, new things are happening, and it's really exciting.
Maybe we should have you in, would you be willing to just do an update presentation in October about all of this fun stuff?
Sure, yeah. Do you want to join me?
Yeah.
Let's a little co-present in October.
It looks like you've got a lot going on and that the commission would be well suited to get to hear that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'll do that. Shall we just go ahead and make an appointment and make sure we got that for October? Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shelly, do we have a date for our next meeting?
Yes. It's October 9th. Oh, no, I'm sorry. October 2nd.
Okay. There we are. So. Okay. All right. Anything else? I guess we will have, I'll say, are there members of the public who would like to comment? You are.
I did not.
And thank you for your input. This is a great point. Thank you so much for being here and for participating in the brainstorming. It was really helpful. If we have nothing else, then we will go ahead and accept one final motion. Commissioner Leonardi?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Yeah, I didn't mean to touch it.
I turned it off.
She's behind you.
Okay. Yeah, motion to adjourn before us. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Great. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you very much.